How would you like a 15% discount to my daily email, the stack of stuff, the show notes, discounts to the conference, all of that? All you need to do is text the word show to 33777. You'll get the annual subscription with a 15% discount to my daily email. You'll get the stack of stuff, the links to the show notes, discounts to the conference, and so much more. All you have to do is text the word show, S-H-O-W, to 33777. Text show to 33777.
Welcome to the Eric Erickson Show podcast, hour two.
Hello, America. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425, should you wish to be on the program. Would love to have you with me. If you text Eric, E-R-I-C-K, to 33777, you can subscribe to the show notes, get the email, so much. Now, those of you on the phones, be patient with me. I want to talk about something because I meant to talk about it yesterday. Got so much other news out there. But I just spend a moment with me here. Joe Biden is losing the election. Democrats privately concede that they can win this race, but they're behind. As I have mentioned ad nauseum, their hope is early voting, that Republicans have convinced themselves not to early vote, and that they can win with the money in the ground game. But they're pivoting as well to a new tactic, and people on the right are making it very easy for them. You need to at least be aware of this. Some of you are going to be offended by what I say, but I really need all of you to listen to this. This is really important. Joe Biden and the Democrats have concluded internally that running against Donald Trump isn't the way to win, because they are seeing the view of Trump's administration improve with people, whether it's the CBS poll or the CNN poll or the ABC or the NBC or the Fox poll. Now a majority of Americans in almost all polls have a favorable view of Donald Trump's tenure in office compared to Joe Biden's. Over 50% believe that Donald Trump's administration was a success now, which wasn't the case when he was elected. But there's something most Americans hate still about Trump. No, it's not the personal foibles. This is why the salaciousness of the trial in New York doesn't really matter, because, I mean, people get it. Donald Trump had an affair with a porn star. He's not a good guy. He has terrible character. And that's baked into the equation. People knew it going into 2016. The Access Hollywood tape didn't cost him any more than sleeping with Stormy Daniels is going to cost him. But there is something Americans hate. Now, I need to preface this with what I said yesterday, is what I say often. Know when you're in the minority, even when you think you're right. Some of you are going to get very defensive when I say this. But it's the Biden strategy based on a lot of focus grouping and surveys, and it's going to start shifting. Do you know what Americans like less than Donald Trump? Put another way, do you know what Americans hate more than Donald Trump? His MAGA base. Don't, I'm just the bearer of bad news. Don't shoot me for telling you. There's a lot of polling that MAGA has very negative connotations. It's why the Christian nationalist conversation has suddenly become a thing, because people look at evangelicals, how can you support this immoral man? And they see all these weird defenses of supporting him. He's like Cyrus or you name it. And non-churched Americans, they're like, you people are hypocrites. They see MAGA and they think of the Tiki Torch whites, which they don't like any more than they like the anti-Semitic Hamas protesters. And if the Biden administration elevates MAGA protesters to the level of the anti-Semites on the left, well, then it neutralizes the issue. Hey, you may not like some of my supporters, but you don't like his supporters either. Who do you hate most? That's what they're going to try to do. We can hope they don't succeed, but some people on the right are making it very easy. I want to play for you some audio. This is Joel Webbin. He is a pastor in Texas. He is a Christian nationalist. He believes this country is full of degenerates who aren't worthy of a constitutional republic, and we need a dictator. The left is elevating him. In fact, it's Right Wing Watch. I actually saw people on the right circulating this clip agreeing with what he said. And I sounded like, yeah, I need to unfollow this person. They're kind of broken. And then I saw Right Wing Watch circulate it. Let me just play you this. Let's see here.
We're degenerates. We're not even close to more, we're degenerates. The Constitution is not, it's not suited for governing degenerates. For governing degenerates, and I'm curious your thoughts on this, if you agree, disagree. But I think for our population that is degraded morally and culturally, as far and religiously, as far as we have, you need power. Men must be governed. you need a Caesar type, you know. Now, if you're asking me my preference, that would probably be my preference, would be a constitutional republic. But I think the conditions for that is a moral people. So I think you can work towards that in the future. But I don't think constitutioning even harder is going to get us out of our current mess. I don't see us getting out of this apart from things getting worse and worse, and then eventually like a Caesar type rising through the ranks, a populist, you know, figure, and the people, you know, the political will of the people, the people are desperate and they're like, yes, do it, so-and-so, and then so-and-so, Constitution be damned, just rules with an iron fist, and the, you know, like a Cromwell type, and then you know, hopefully don't get his son, maybe then you're able, and then you maybe it's just a one generation, one guy kind of thing, and then you have to move back to, you know, aristocracy or some other form.
That's a Christian pastor essentially saying we're too degenerate for a constitutional republic. We need a Caesar who can impose his will, and then hopefully we don't get his son next. And then maybe we can move to something. Some of you may agree with him. We're too degenerate for a constitutional republic. You want to take that public and see what the American public does with you right now? Good luck with that. Right now, Biden is actually losing on the democracy issue. In fact, a great many Americans view the Democrats as a threat to democracy in this country. This is from MSNBC, a discussion they're having about some of the latest polling.
Another thing interesting in this polling was more independents said that they worry about President Biden weakening democracy than Trump, 53% to 42%. What do you make of this?
I find it shocking, honestly. I can't, you know, make sense of that number. I wish I could. I wish I could have some really great insight to it. But I don't know if it's an outlier or not, because the other numbers with independents and Biden are going in the right direction. So that may be it. But also, just one thing I wanted to add on to what Basil said. You know, this trial's not on TV. You guys do a great job reporting what's happening. But if there aren't those images coming out of the courthouse, people feel like they know this story. We've heard about it for a long time. So it does.
Can't answer the question. Let's pivot back to the Trump trial. That's a problem for the Democrats. By the way, that's the Marist NPR PBS poll, that a majority of independents actually see the Democrats as more a threat to democracy than Trump. Well, of course, the Democrats are the ones taking Trump off the ballot undemocratically, rebuked by the Supreme Court. You start elevating guys like Webbin, though, and the we're too degenerate for a constitutional republic, we need a Caesar, you're going to have the Democrats using that sort of stuff to really show, hey, these are the theological thinking voices of the right, and they're calling for a Caesar. When you have the MAGA kids and the MAGA hats show up yelling racial epithets, it's going to be played up. You have the frat boy at whatever fraternity it was yelled some racial epithet in a counter protest, and that became the story. They want to elevate this stuff. Marjorie Taylor Greene trying to oust the Speaker of the House, being rejected by people. That becomes the big story because it's helpful to the left through the media to vilify people on the right because a majority of Americans don't actually like MAGA. They don't. You may love them. They may be your friends and family. But again, know when you're in the minority, even when you think you're right. A lot of Americans, it leaves a bad taste in their mouth. What comes off is kind of like this cult of personality, Trump can do no wrong. And all of these people on the right suddenly say, hey, you know what? We are too bad of a people. The country's broken. We need to give up. We just need a dictator. That sort of stuff scares normal people. Why? Because normal people see a system that's working. Look at our judicial system. Under our Constitution, Donald Trump is getting all the benefits of the doubt as he's supposed to in our constitutional system, and it's the left upset about it. The House and the Senate may not do much, but they do still work. Gridlock is good. It slows them down, but this is our constitutional system. We're headed into a presidential election season. The Constitution is a structure of government. The Constitution is not about imposing your morality on other people. The only time the Constitution has ever been used to impose its morality on people was twice. Once with prohibition and the second time with abortion, one of which got rid of by the Supreme Court, the other by a vote of the people. In every other case, the Constitution is just designed to be the structure of government. Where does power lie in the government, with the people or the states, and how does the power lie once it's in those locations? That's it. That's all the Constitution does. To say that we're too degenerate for a constitutional republic is to embrace the feelings of people like Ben Franklin and John Adams, who these same people would view as degenerates today. It's also kind of crazy talk to normal people. In your little chat bubbles, it may sound totally normal for you to be outspoken about it, but I assure you, if you have any sort of platform, the left and the media are going to elevate the snot out of it to say, look at these people. They're insane. They're anti-American. They want a Caesar, not an elected president. We can't have these people have power. It's what they're going to do. They can't run against Donald Trump. The left can't run against Donald Trump. Joe Biden can't run against Donald Trump. It's already baked into the equation that people hate Joe Biden more than Donald Trump. The only thing that's not baked into the equation is that many Americans hate MAGA, and if Joe Biden runs against MAGA, he gets a chance to redefine the whole operation against not Trump, but Trump's supporters. You got to think about that. You got to think about how you relate to other people. I've said all along, Americans are looking for an alternative to the angry left. And the angry right is not an alternative to the angry left. Our ways do not have to be their ways. There are many louder voices on the right insisting that we need to operate just like the left. Be as vindictive as them, be as angry as them, be in people's faces like they are, and that's our path to victory. It's not, because Americans don't want that. They want an alternative. They want the happy warrior, not the brain biblical donkey. When you give them calls for dictatorship and anger and rage, and when you decide the best way to love your neighbor is to kick him in the groin, you're not providing a welcoming alternative to American voters who want a way out of the left's insanity. What you're doing is providing more insanity, and Americans are going to opt out of that, and they're going to reject you too. You win more with honey than with vinegar. You win more people with smiles instead of scowls. We have an opportunity to win in November, but not by platforming and elevating the crazy talk of we need a dictator. Americans are going to reject that, and they will stay with Joe Biden if that becomes what the right is defined by. Welcome, Eric Erickson here across the nation. The phone number 877-973-7425. Brian in Jacksonville, Florida. You're up next. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Eric. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I just want to make a comment. You know, this Biden holding back weapons for Israel, it's like, you know, like you said before, people telling the U.S. how to fight a war in Vietnam, in, you know, Korea, World War II, Afghanistan, Iraq. Israel has all these enemies on their border. It's not like, you know, we're fighting against Canada or Mexico. And so, you know, they have the enemy right there. And for Biden to hold back, you know, for political reasons, to hold back supplying Israel with weapons is totally ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It is. And you know, Brian, let's be honest. There's someone out there listening right now saying, we are at war with Canada and Mexico. But, yes, to your point, they've got Gaza, and they have Syria, and they have Hezbollah and Lebanon on their border. They are existential threats to Israel. All of them are pledged to wipe Israel off the map. These are not good scenarios. And yet we got people in this country, including Joe Biden, who want to tell them how to keep themselves safe. I need you guys to remember the Brett Stevens piece from yesterday. Israel as a nation exists in part because it became very clear that there was no country safe for Jews except one they themselves controlled. And that is where the Zionist movement came from, a return to their native land. Archaeologically, take the Bible out of it. Archaeologically, the overwhelming archaeological evidence is that the Jews were in that area prior to the Palestinians. They predate everybody except the random Canaanite tribes. That's not the Bible, that's archaeology. The kingdom of David is real. We have the archaeological evidence to show that it was real, a pre-exilic Jewish kingdom. It was the Romans who threw them out. It's all documented in secular history. And the world realized that letting the Jews control their destiny was good for them and good for the world. If anything, there's jealousy because of their success. And so much of this comes from the jealousy of the success of the Jews by others. And what October 7th has shown the Jews is that never again can only mean never again if they aggressively eliminate their enemies, which they should do. Now, you should listen to me about Swiss America. Between bank collapses, with more teetering on the brink, regulators seemingly fighting an unwinnable war, then factor in 22-year high interest rates, and you know why Swiss America is critical at this time. If you're interested in safeguarding your hard-earned cash from a secret war on cash that I've been telling you about, listen for a critical free report rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau. Swiss America can educate you on protecting your assets in their shocking free report, Secret War on Cash. And shocking is an understatement when you realize how the government and private corporations collude to steer you towards credit cards and away from using your assets. Get your free copy by calling or texting 800-289-2646. The All-Out War on Cash includes digital currencies, and it's growing. Read the Secret War on Cash report for free. Just mention Eric when you call or text 800-289-2646. That's 800-289-2646, or visit SwissAmerica.com/Eric. Just text my name to 800-289-2646. Message and data rates may apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 877-973-7425. Should you wish to be on the program, want to take Jim's call, calling from WDBO, Orlando, Florida. Welcome, Jim. How are you?
Well, I'm fine, Eric. Thank you. Listen, I wanted to tell you, aside from what I want to talk about, that I really appreciate your ability to bring common sense to some of the most divisive issues that we face today. I was listening to your monologue at the top of the hour, at least I caught the last half of it, where you were describing what the voters want in a candidate. And I was thinking that how important those observations were in congressional candidates as well as presidential candidates. And, you know, I'm old enough to remember all the way back to Eisenhower, and there's only been one really good president that has exemplified some of the qualities that would really appeal to voters of common sense, core values, and the ability to call out or highlight hypocrisy with humor, and that was Ronald Reagan. And
I was holding my breath there, Jim, and about to say, please say Reagan, don't say anybody else.
I said Ronald Reagan.
Yep.
I did say that. And it reminds me that there's a candidate today who kind of, in his own manner, his own way, exemplifies a lot of that characteristics. And that's Mike Johnson. These Republicans could learn a lot from him. He is so mild-mannered in a way, but he's so calm and logical, and he never loses his core values, but he's able to talk and negotiate and get along with people. And I just wish there were a lot more Republican candidates like him.
You know, it's funny you say that, Jim. So there was an article, 2 days ago, I had it in the show notes, but didn't get to talk about it on radio, from, I want to say it was Politico, where they were noting that when you talk to Republicans behind the scenes, one of the reasons that they were going to stick with Johnson is because while not all of them think he's the strongest speaker they've seen, they just personally like the guy, that he's willing to listen to all sides. He's willing to not overpromise, and he tries to keep his word as best he can, and he explains it to you straight when he can't. And people have just appreciated that leadership style of his. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie showboating the way they did on this. I got to say, when they bring up uniparty, it's kind of an unthoughtful bit of rhetorical bubble talk in Washington, D.C. right now among conservatives, that I'm not getting my way on this issue, therefore it's the uniparty against me. And it makes them sound courageous and valiant, but also it really is an epitome of they can't get anything done, and what they want to get done, they haven't built bridges to get it done, and they would rather be losers and hold their head up than try to advance their agenda. This all-or-nothing approach is killing conservatism in D.C. So, Jim, thank you. And you know, it's notable, several people in this article noted that Johnson's votes as a conservative in the House completely different from where he is as a leader, but that's the element of being the Speaker of the whole House, and not just as a congressman representing one district in Louisiana. I have this ongoing frustration with people who are friends of mine in Washington who just seem to think it's got to be all or nothing, that there's so much at stake. We can't take an inch, except the problem is you're never taking the mile. I'd love to take the mile, but you're not going to with a two-seat majority. And the idea of blowing it all up and scrapping everything because you can't take a mile, you're just going to give the Democrats more. So many people in Washington on the right have confused tactics and strategy. And they're willing to do tactical plays without an overarching strategy, but they've convinced themselves that the deployment of tactics is a strategy, and it's not. All it does is it plays to the Democrats' hands. Mike Johnson, to a degree, is now indebted to the Democrats because of what Marjorie Taylor Greene did. And she can say that, well, he's the Democratic speaker and the Democrats are in charge and there's no difference between the parties. But, you know, Mike Johnson has stopped the Democrats from pursuing reconciliation, which they can do and bypass the filibuster in the Senate. He's blocked them from doing that. You want the single biggest difference between Hakeem Jeffries as speaker and Mike Johnson? Mike Johnson's blocked the Democrats from reconciliation. Nothing good would come of reconciliation, and he stopped it. And you may not like Mike Johnson, but that's a reality. Now, I got to move on to other stuff, and I want to talk about some new polling out that I find very interesting. Turns out the Democrats have overplayed their hand on climate change. According to a Monmouth University poll, the share of Americans who think climate change is a very serious problem has dropped from 56% in 2021 to 46% in 2024. Contrary to Democratic talking points about how the youth want us to save the planet for their future, that drop is actually driven by the youngest demographic. The percentage of people between 18 and 34 that call the problem very serious dropped from 67% to 50%. Support for government action on climate change, a vague idea that you would think should get broad, unthinking support, also dropped from 66% to 59%, driven again by a drop among young people from 80% to 62%. This is all good to remember the next time liberal media positioned climate change as a premier concern for young voters, when actually it's not even in the top 10. Now, part of what's going on here is we have arrived at the age of the estimate. We've arrived at the age of the prediction. When the Democrats told us 10 years ago the glaciers would all be melted, well, we're now in the period where the glaciers should be melted, and they're still there. When the Democrats told us the oceans would boil, we're at the now time period where the oceans should be boiling, and they're not. When the Democrats told us we would have massive repeated hurricanes, we're now at the period where we should have massive repeated hurricanes, and we're not. So many of their predictions failed to come true. There is still Arctic ice. There is still Antarctic ice. There is still snowfall in the winter. There are still heat waves in the summer, which you expect. To the extent that there's coastal flooding, it has more to do with land sinking than oceans rising. The island nations they said would be disappeared by now are still there. Their scenarios didn't play out, and yet the left still wishes to destroy your way of life. From Politico, Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor of California, a Biden surrogate and potential presidential contender, is pushing aggressive climate change in appearances from China to the Vatican, selling it as a winning issue beyond the borders of his deep blue state. His pitch, the effects of climate change are upon us, and the world, including California, ignores them at their peril. California is meeting the moment head on as the hots get hotter, the dries get drier, the wets get wetter, simultaneous droughts and rain bombs, Newsom said last month at a Central Valley orchard outfitted with solar panels and batteries. We have to address these issues with a ferocity that is required of us. He's headed to the Vatican to meet with the Pope and other leaders, where he'll highlight what's at stake with global temperatures hurtling towards alarming new heights. The trip comes after a swing through China last fall, where he touted California's sharing of climate policy and technology. His moves to promote electric vehicles and renewable energy while phasing out gas-powered cars, trying to recoup climate-related damages from oil giants and going after refiners' profits has won support in California, but his efforts face a reliable line of attack from the industry and Republicans who say it's all too expensive. Notice how Politico, a left-wing publication, talks about the industry and Republicans, not ordinary Americans. Meanwhile, ordinary Americans are getting fed up with the nonsense. They're getting fed up. They have decided they are tired of an all-or-nothing approach. They're tired of harming their way of life. They're tired of reducing the electrical grid as the government intends to put more battery-powered vehicles on the market, causing blackouts and brownouts around the country. They're just tired of it. Gavin Newsom won't stop, and he's using California to impose his will on the rest of the nation. This is one of the tweaks that I think we constitutionally do need to make through congressional legislation, is one state shouldn't be able to disrupt economically all the other states through regulation. And Congress can fix that. We don't need a congressional amendment. We just need a law. Congress can and should do it. But Gavin Newsom making his whole pitch climate change as a way to get himself a Republican or Democratic nomination in 28 is only going to backfire, because more and more Americans are now living at the moment that the predictions should be coming true, and none of them really are. But climate change is a religion, and it's not going to change. It's only going to get more dogmatic. Let's go back to the phones. Brian, you're going to be up next. Welcome to the show, Brian. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks so much. It's really nice to talk to you.
You too.
And I really appreciate how much of a realist you are. It kind of makes me mad sometimes. But something you just said was so helpful to kind of keep you in check, you know, when you're kind of being a little emotional and zealous about your political stuff. And I guess it comes from your background. But you talked about the difference between strategy and tactics. Could you expound a little bit more on that? It would be so helpful.
Yes. Okay. I got two great examples for you. Let's do the Democrats on healthcare versus the Republicans on immigration. So Democrats on healthcare. Okay. In 1980, Ted Kennedy said he wanted universal healthcare in the United States. And what Ted Kennedy and the Democrats did is they committed to a long-term strategy where over time they would, by bits and pieces in small bits, add legislation that would increasingly begin to blow up the private healthcare insurance contracts in America and drive up costs to force the public to shift on the issue so that they could ultimately get to Obamacare. It took them from 1980 to 2010 to do, but they over time added more mandates that private insurance companies they were required to cover pregnancy, they were required to cover breast cancer screenings, they were required to cover testicular cancer screenings, they were required to cover your kids, they were required, and it was all popular. And oh my gosh, look, we're going to make our insurance companies do this. And it was all designed to drive up costs. So then in the 1990s, they could say after a 10-year period, well, look, now look at these healthcare costs. Now we need to do something to bail people out of these healthcare costs. And over time, they began to maneuver for a public health exchange, which became Obamacare. It took them 30 years to get there, but that was by design. Now look at Republicans on immigration. Republicans on immigration, they don't have an overarching strategy of first we're going to increase the number of Border Patrol agents. That's all. We're growing government employees. Democrats, you should like it. Then, okay, now we're going to add provisions blocking amnesty in this country because the border's overwhelmed. Okay, now we're going to do a little compromise. We're going to say if you've been here for 30 years, you're not going to get citizenship, but we'll give you your green card so you can't actually vote in the country, but you're not going to have to worry about deportation. But we're going to couple it with aggressive deportation of current illegal immigrants. What the Republicans have done is prepared an omnibus piece of legislation that they try to advance and they can't get the votes for the entire thing. And so it always blows up. So we don't actually get what the Republicans want. The Democrats got what they wanted on healthcare because they went for inch after inch after inch after inch after inch. Republicans want to do the whole thing in one piece of legislation that can't pass and it blows up. So then what do the Republicans do on the opposite side? They engage in a series of tactics with the Democrats without this overarching strategy where if they don't get their way, they're going to shut down the government. They're going to press a funding package and they're not going to accept the compromise. It's going to be the all or nothing approach and they're going to shut down government. And it fails every single time because where Democrats take inch after inch after inch and design it and stack the deck so that the ultimate stack of Jenga blocks is going to fall over without government doing something. The Republicans, if they can't smash it with the first pull on the Jenga board, well, they don't want to play the game. And so they always wind up losing when they could be winning if they played smarter, but they're just not patient. And every time they justify it by saying, we're at the end, we're at a crisis, we have to have all or nothing. Well, when you have to have all or nothing because we're in a crisis, you're going to get nothing. Do it incrementally. It took us a very long time to get to $34 trillion in debt. It's going to take a long time to get out of it. So stop trying to go from $34 trillion to no debt in 24 hours. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and on the whole, are you pretty much admitting that we as the right do not do politics as well as the Democrats do?
Oh, I think that's true. We do policy much better than them, but we're terrible at policy. We're terrible at politics because on the right, we're so used, frankly, and it has a lot to do with people being burned for so long. We're not willing to compromise anymore in the way the left is willing to compromise. We see compromise on our side as a betrayal, and the left sees compromise as a way of getting slowly their ideas passed. And we've got to be willing to make some compromise on our side. Frankly, the greatest example, and Brian, I got to let you go there because I got to go to break, but the greatest example here is Matt Gaetz. Republicans, the moderates, the liberals, and the conservatives agreed to cut government spending by 8%, the first congressional Republican agreement across the ideological spectrum, and Matt Gaetz blew it up and ousted Kevin McCarthy, and we haven't gotten back to it. And that's the problem with the GOP, the self-interest and the inability to compromise in our direction. All-or-nothing approaches aren't going to work it these days in Washington. Democrats know that. Republicans don't. Now, one group that does is Americans for Prosperity, and they put points on the board for the right, advancing small government reforms, limited government reforms, and essentially reminding people that conservatism works. And one of the great ways they do that is, in fact, reminding people that we already have the ideas to fix the economy, the tried and the true approach. And so they're reminding people with a bus tour called Prosperity is Possible. They're going around the country, and they're educating Americans on the tried and the true conservative free market ideas to rescue the economy from the current policies and inflation, to remind Americans we know the path out of high inflation and a stagnant economy, and to get Americans involved in advocating for those ideas. Go to prosperityispossible.com. Find out where they're going to be in your local community. Prosperityispossible.com. It's a nationwide tour brought to you by Americans for Prosperity. The website again, prosperityispossible.com. You can find out where they're going to be and go hear great insights from key conservative leaders. Welcome. It is Eric Erickson here. The phone number is 877-973-7425. A reminder, if you text ENGAGE to 33777, you can get tickets to the gathering in August. We have a great lineup of speakers. We were planning panel discussions today, relevant and timely, the direction of life in the country. National security, reminding people that free market solutions work, but also we'll have great speakers as well. We look forward to having you, where we take our radio audience and our online readers, put them together in person in a room in Atlanta, have a drink, enjoy each other's company, and hear from some of the leading thoughtful people on the right. Looking forward to having you there. Now, when we come back, well, we got to get into Aaron Burnett's interview with Joe Biden on the economic stuff. I can't believe he said what he said, and yet he did. And I don't know that he did himself any favors. But of course, also, you got the Republicans now coming out swinging against Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Moscow Marjorie has clearly gone off the deep end, maybe the result of a space laser. But this type of tantrum is absolutely unacceptable.
Yeah, that's a Republican.